Hi guys, welcome to today's episode. Just as a side note, Hayley references some resources during our chat, all of which I've put links to in the show notes. I really hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello everybody, you have joined me today on the Don't Get Lippy podcast episode with the lovely Hayley. Hayley is based in Auckland, which is in New Zealand, the North Island, as I've just been, you know, had a quick geography lesson with Hayley. Hayley, if you'd like to introduce yourself and your family setup and who we're predominantly talking about today in our episode.
Yeah, hello. I am Hayley and I am a mother to my beautiful girl, Keris, who was born with a unilateral cleft lip and palate. And it was me and my husband together and our dog Toby.
Obviously, a little bit about Keris. Obviously, she was born with a unilateral cleft lip and palate. When was her cleft diagnosed?
So most of them over in New Zealand get picked up, especially if it's a lip as well as a palate, get picked up at the 20-week scan. So I vividly remember the sonographer going over the palate and taking a photo, and I just kind of brushed it off. I just thought it was part of their, you know, what they need to do. And got a call from the midwife about that the baby's got a cleft lip and palate. Yeah, we just went from there of a world of emotions again.
Of course. Is there any family history of clefts for you guys?
Not really, no. Not that we can track back to, you know, 50, 70 years ago. But funnily enough, like when Keris was diagnosed, her auntie in Wales was like, oh, a second cousin or something was born with a cleft lip. And it was just like the minor, like little lip, palate and everything was fine. So that was really interesting, actually, like quite distant related, but still within the family.
So when you guys had fallen pregnant and then you're going for this 20-week, presumably that's your anomaly scan, similar to here in the UK. Yeah. Did they tell you there and then? Or did they, because you said you had a call from the midwife, so they didn't tell you?
Yeah, no, they don't. That it's part of their procedure that the sonographer doesn't say anything. It's the doctor or your midwife or obstetrician's role to pass on that information to the family. Yeah, so from there, the midwife got in touch with all the correct people, our cleft team, and that's when the follow-ups happened of the scans, just to confirm what it was, because, you know, these sonographers with the cleft team see it daily, and they could give us more information on the size, and, oh, yep, that is the cleft lip, there's the cleft palate. And although, like, you're sitting there, like, really nervous and so uncertain, the team, and we were lucky that the cleft nurse was there as well, are just, that's normal, and still, you know, still a beautiful baby. And like they completely react in the way that you kind of need for your self-esteem and self-worth to be met. Yeah.
So your sonographer has to have a bit of a poker face then, presumably. Because I know for sure when we had our scan, you know, straight away the sonographer was like, yeah, okay, I think I can see something. So yeah, they must have a proper sort of poker face reaction. And so how quickly after the diagnosis, how quickly did they get in contact with you?
The next couple of days, maybe the day after or the second day after we had gone for the scan, which is sometimes a little bit like, oh, what's going on? Because when you go, you're not actually told that the sonographer can't pass on any information. So when you have your 20-week scan, you think, and even 12 weeks, like you think everything's all good. Yep, I can start telling people, like, and then you get kind of bombarded with this bombshell, like, oh, okay, right.
Had you seen a cleft or heard of a cleft before Keris's diagnosis?
Yeah, so I'm a kindy teacher, so I've had a few children with a palate. I was actually currently looking after a child with a cleft, just a soft palate, and we've got some friends that have one guy was born with a bilateral, but you know, he's got a beard and moustache now, and you don't see anything. Another friend, I think she was just a palate, her lip was fine. Definitely here, I've heard of it, but you just don't ever think that that's on the tables when you're going in for a scan, because I always focused on everything else, like downs and making sure that the heart is going and the kidneys and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. You just don't, they've got 10 fingers and 10 toes. Like, you just don't think of a cleft lip and palate at any stage.
Obviously, you said that your husband's Welsh, so, or has Welsh family. So is all the family in New Zealand, or do you have everybody kind of spread out? And how did they react when you told them?
So all of my family's in Auckland. Mm-hmm. And all of John's family is in Wales. They were absolutely fine, which is like super reassuring, because I'm quite an emotional person. And so, like, on the phone, you know, like, my processing was like just to kind of break down and cry, really. I'd be on the phone telling them, even though I may have had a cry beforehand, and you'd be on the phone and you'd say, oh yeah, so she's got a cleft lip and palate, and crying. So they're kind of reading between the lines of what you've said. And a lot of people's response was like, that's okay, it can be fixed, like, still, you know, still healthy, which you are reassured that, but still, when you're going through it, and that's the best thing about the cleft team, like, the nurse has been with the cleft team for 20 odd years here in Auckland at Middlemore Hospital, and she is just such an amazing person, an amazing woman, and she absolutely sees the delight and joy in every child. And she said to me, you'll look past the cleft and you'll absolutely fall in love with the smile. Those words don't actually sink in until you meet your child. So no matter who you talk to, it takes a while for you to process your own thoughts, and, you know, we got there in the end.
Absolutely. Did you feel like the cleft diagnosis took over your pregnancy, or did you, you know, did you get to a point where you kind of thought, okay, this, you know, we can deal with this? And were you able to enjoy your pregnancy before Karis was born?
Yeah, so when we found out, like, that I was on the kindy school holidays, which was 2 weeks, the 2 week break, I grieved. Definitely, I grieved because there's so much uncertainty of what's going to happen. Being a mum, you constantly are going through lots of different thoughts, not only like when they're newborn, but like as they grow up. You know, like bullying and what society will think. And your mind is just going in all sorts of directions. I definitely grieved and was upset for 2 weeks. And then once you have those other appointments and you do talk to the experts and you meet the surgeon, and which is also an amazing person, you just come to terms with it. You're gaining more knowledge. I started searching a little bit on Instagram and luckily came across beautiful people like yourselves. And you have that hope and that reassurance that everything is going to be okay. And to get me through, I just started talking to her. I just started to talk to her and tell her how beautiful she was, how strong she is, that she's going to be so kind and, you know, a good sleeper. Or not only like cleft related.
I like that. I think that's a really,
everything.
I think that's a really nice thing to kind of put out there, though, that actually, you know, that is a way that people in regular situations would bond with their babies, to talk to them and ask them questions and, you know, tell them how much you love them. So actually, that's a really lovely thing to sort of mention. So obviously, you being as far away from me as possible, I don't know anything about your like healthcare system or anything. So how does it work with you guys? Do you have to travel to certain hospitals for your appointments, or
So we are super lucky where we are in Auckland. The cleft team is at Middlemore Hospital, which is only 15 minutes, 20 minutes down the road, if there's no traffic. But yes, we're so, so lucky that everything is there. The nurse has been there for 20 odd years. And they've actually they've got 4 surgeons, but the 2 of the older surgeons weren't taking any more clients on. So they're like seeing their older clients that would be maybe like 15 plus, because it's free from when they're born to 18. So everything's been funded, which is absolute godsend. All the appointments, surgeries, the bottles, speech and language appointments and resources, hearing, everything has been funded. And you you know, when she grows older, she'll need braces and that's funded. Like, you see, like, the silver lining. You're like, yeah, she's got a cleft, but you're like, all this money that we, you know, probably like $100,000's worth, it's all funded. So we're super lucky and so grateful to be in a country that has that support. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. So take me back then. So Keris was born and you saw her, and what were your first thoughts when you saw her?
I was like, Megan's right. The cleft nurse is right. I absolutely love my girl. Like, she, and it brings tears to my eyes now, like, just looking back. Yeah, I was straight away. I was like, she's beautiful. And I did look past the cleft, and that's just me. Like, there's definitely some mothers that would, you know, take time there. Yeah, sure, there was a cleft there, but they said, like, their eyes, like, God kind of gave them, and I'm not religious at all, but like, God gave them like a cleft lip, but their eyes are just like absolutely stunning. And they were just like, and I look back and yeah, I was absolutely in love with her. Yeah, definitely.
I know. Yeah. I don't know about you, but when I first saw Will, like, his cleft was overwhelming, but I was like, yeah, I am just so pleased that you're here. And like, yes, now that you're here physically, we can do everything we can do to help you. So it was a relief, but also overwhelmed, but happiness. So I totally understand where you're coming from.
And it's such a journey, because like, it's hard taking care of a newborn even without any other things in them. So yeah, it was definitely a learning curve of like, right, what do we do? Because
now what?
yeah, like skin to skin. And like, they really push you on breastfeeding here at the maternity ward, and we didn't get like a really great nurse until the morning, and she showed me how to hand express. Okay. And so we started hand expressing colostrum and syringe feeding her, and because in the middle of the night she was crying, and I'm like, she's hungry, like, I can't provide for her, you know, like, what am I to do? Mm-hmm. So we were like, opt in for formula, and I didn't, or both of us were just like, we're going to do what we need to do to keep this baby happy and our mental health happy and well-being as well. And so when we did start seeing the other lactation consultant and bringing in all like the breast pumps and everything like that, yeah, it was definitely like, okay, this is how it's going to work, and pumping and expressing, and
it's hard work, isn't it? It is. Yeah. Like, you know, not being able to breastfeed, you know, for a lot of women, and I include myself in it, it's like, oh, I feel like I've let Will down again, like it's something else that I can't do for him, like that he's not able to do. And then somewhat of the expectation of, you know, oh, well, if you can't breastfeed, you can still pump. And it's like, okay, I'll give it a go. But it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of effort. So fair play for doing it.
So much effort. I just didn't really, I'm quite a routine person. Mm-hmm. And you kind of are like, okay, how are we going to fit this in? Do I do it for 10 minutes, 20 minutes? And it took maybe like a month or two until like you really relaxed about what was happening.
So obviously you were pumping. How was Keris actually fed? Was she able to bottle feed?
Yeah, so we, they have pigeon bottles here. She was such a trooper. Because she was born on a Wednesday night, and like the cleft team isn't around on the weekend, so we're kind of like trying to push to get out by the Friday, and we needed the cleft team to come and see her use the bottle before we could get charged. She did really well. Hadn't had her appointment or anything for her palate, the little plate that they make. Yeah, she did so well in chewing the milk that we were so lucky to get discharged on that Friday and kind of go home and just be in your own space.
There's a lot to be said for getting home and being in your own environment, and you know, like you say, being able to relax and you know, start finding your feet, because it is, as you said, you know, a newborn anyway, let alone if there's extra stuff that you've got to be doing. So I totally get it. And so you mentioned about a plate. So Keris had a plate. Did she have a lip strap? I have a feeling she did.
Yeah, she did. So they did the plate first. I have to really cast back my memory now. And they did the plate first. And we did and it was so amazing. We went in, I think, the morning, and they took the mold, and then we came back home and then we went back in the afternoon and they made sure that it fitted well. And so we, she had that for 2 weeks. Okay. And then we could start taping. Yeah. So we first started with just like the tape across. Mm-hmm. And then as she grew, which was really scary as well, because they don't change the plate and the plate can get loose.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd be lying on her back sometimes. And like, so they told us to use like denture gluing stuff. Yeah. When that wore off, she would like kind of be like choking on her plate. Sometimes like manage it, but sometimes I'll be like, ah, and like, you know, run to her and like you pull it out and you've got all the denture gooiness all over it. It's quite gross. After that, they taught us a trick which was quite bitsy. You had to use a rubber band, which I think they do in Australia mostly, to get a bit of an elastic stretch in there. So we did that only for like a month or so before she had her first surgery. Yeah.
So when was her first surgery?
She was 5.5 months.
What was more challenging for you? Was it the lead up? Was it the actually being there when she was having surgery? Was it the aftercare? Like, how was that process for you?
Oh, and all of it, it was like challenging in itself, I suppose. Like the beginning, I was just so anxious and on the day, anxious and like excited at the same time. And I got like a beautiful photo of the day before of her at like a baby sensory class with her beautiful cleft smile that I need to get framed. Like, it's one of my favorite photos. Then when I went down to recovery after her surgery, like it was longer than what I thought, because she went in and out of sleep and recovery, so they don't like to get you down there when they're asleep. So I went down there and I was just so shocked with how much her face had changed. It really is a big change. And that took a little while to get used to as well. Like, just mentally, you're like, that's still my child, but it's not. Like,
I say to people is that, you know, you spend your whole pregnancy worried about people's perception of like somebody that's born with a cleft and, you know, how are people going to react and how am I going to feel about it? And then, you know, months in, it's then surgery time and you think, yeah, but I like this face. And I mean, we both know that that's not medically possible and surgery has to be done, but you then have to learn this new face and you, like you say, you know it's them, but actually at the same time it's not them, and it's kind of learning that new sort of look at you. Really,
we are lucky that we get to fall in love with two beautiful smiles, and I love the fact that the cleft community have their little sayings that just make the parents a little bit more reassured and positive and proud that what they've been through.
So she had her lip and presumably hard palate done in that one appointment. She's had her soft palate done. When was that done?
She was 9 months, but they actually did the hard palate at the same time with her, because the surgeon, he wasn't that happy with how the hard palate had healed.
Okay.
So he ended up doing the hard palate and the soft palate.
Oh, right. So on the first one, he did the hard palate, but then he kind of did a bit of a reconstruction on the second appointment.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Which surgery recovery was harder?
I think that even though she bounced back quicker on the second, I think the second was harder because she knew she was just a little bit older. So like at 5.5 months, even though she's wearing the arm splints, you're kind of there with her for sleeping and resettling. But when she was a bit older, that frustration kicked in a bit more, and she was attached to her bunny, and she loves that thing, and she couldn't nuzzle it, you know, and you just felt for her because that was her comfort.
Yeah.
And you've taken that away from her. So, I think that the second surgery was definitely harder for recovery. Also, like, she was more a little bit independent in terms of sitting up and playing. So, like, we could be with her right there and have the arm splints off and make sure that nothing was going in her mouth. She could play a little bit more, whereas before she was just kind of like lying down on her back, and she actually learned to roll over at that point as well on the fan. So yeah, I think the second recovery.
And you said that she had arm splints. So I had arm splints when I had surgery, but here they don't routinely do arm splint. I've got photos of Will post soft palate and he's got little socks on his
So yeah, you have to wear them for 3 weeks. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A long time.
That is a long time. Yeah. For, you know, especially being a bit older, like that I would find really frustrating, because you kind of know that you can do this normally, but actually what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a robot. Like, yeah.
Old blender. Yeah. How did you, kind of going back a little bit, when Keris was first born pre-surgery, how did you find taking her out and about? And, you know, were you ever worried or anxious about taking her out to like the sensory groups and things?
Yeah, I definitely was worried about that when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
More so than at the time. So Keris was born and Dad had his 2 weeks at home.
Yeah.
Then we went into a lockdown for like 6 weeks.
Okay.
So we didn't actually get out and about until she was like 4 months, really.
Okay.
That included like coffee group, and they were I had told them, so they were, you know, absolutely fine. I felt, especially after meeting them a couple of times, I felt more confident around them and a bit more happier, and like, this is what it is. When you go out in public, I just found that anybody that you came across was like, oh, she's got a cleft lip. So-and-so, I know, had a cleft lip. Or, you know, like, it was really relatable. Yeah. Everybody knows someone that is affected in some way. And also it just opened up different other disabilities of what might happen, or, you know, like if they have like a mole or anything really. Yeah, it just opened up that communication a bit more. And I think like moving forward as a parent, as she gets older and she is aware of other people around her, you know, I'll try my best to educate her and, you know, like if you want to ask someone, you know, is it all right if I ask about like why you're in a wheelchair or whatever it may be, you know, like, and having that open conversation so it becomes normal, both parties feel validated and respected of like who they are. Yeah. Like, you can't really move forward unless you have those tricky conversations, really, can you?
I think, you know, we had a couple of odd comments from people, but actually on the whole, I always found that people are more intrigued, and a lot of people haven't seen an unrepaired cleft. And ironically, even our GP hadn't seen an unrepaired cleft. He was like, this is really interesting. I thought, great, I'm glad that we're here to impart knowledge. <with you." laughs> But I think, you know, for anybody listening, I think it hopefully is quite reassuring to know that most people, they're just intrigued, and they just, it's such a fascinating difference that most people are always going to be quite supportive around it. So I'm glad that that was your experience as well.
Yeah. And like, you go through pregnancy and then even like birth, and you just hear so many different stories, and you're just like, okay, well, everyone's got their own path of like how challenging and, you know, how successful it is. So like, you just learn to accept different scenarios of family lives. Yeah.
So lovely little Keris, and that little headband that she's worn. Can you tell me a little bit more about her hearing? So I know that obviously she's had bits and pieces going on with her hearing. So when did you know that her hearing was affected?
So she passed her newborn hearing test, and it wasn't until she had her follow-up hearing. I'm trying to think about when it was now. She didn't get the Baha headband until she was a bit older, like 7 months.
Okay.
So they kind of like reassured us that, oh yeah, so she passed her newborn hearing, and the hearing tests, when they put them in, they could see that there was fluid in the ear, and it was, yeah, the sound was bouncing off the fluid, which is all a really big learning curve. She was so great at wearing the little headband and in the test, and then the follow-up with the actual Baha headband, it didn't really affect her. But yeah, they just say it's like having, like, you're underwater, so it's very unclear. So yeah, she wore the headband for a while, for a good couple of months, and then she just recently got grommets. But like before grommets, like, we hadn't put the headband on her because she started taking it off.
Okay.
And that was like around Christmas time when she was around one. And then they were like, oh, just try it again. So then we did, and she was actually fine. So then it did go back from like wearing it to not wearing it. So we just did what we could, really, because you can't force a child to wear something, can you? Like, she was pretty great and at wearing it, and it didn't bother her. And then she started daycare, so she did wear it at daycare, so she would have been about 13-14 months, so she was wearing it around then. And so she's 17 months now, and she just got grommets 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it's so gross. The wax that comes out, like, it is absolutely disgusting. Yeah, so her glue ear is such, like, so over the time that her palate was repaired, then the fluid should naturally drain, right? So that was happening on her left side, but not necessarily her right side. So there was still a bit of wax, like, this coming out on her left side, but her right side, oh, so much. And it's so hard as a mum, like, not to, like, you know, get too involved. Yeah, like, because you have natural fluid. It's doing what it needs to. It's clearing out the ears. But luckily, that's died down now. The wax has kind of come out.
Great. Well, I mean, at least it's working and it's doing its job, and the surgery was worthwhile having.
It's been interesting to see how she responds to different sounds, like, or just how she babbles a bit more now. A lot of things were before, it was like, mum, 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 which she did before and still does. And she's doing a lot of back sounds, which is pretty common anyway, and but she's exploring it a bit more. Yeah, it's interesting, her characteristics, her gestures have kind of changed a bit towards, like, her hearing. Yeah,
that's really good. What kind of speech pathway are you on with her?
We are just cruising along. Still doing those really hard sounds, those pressure sounds, mm-hmm. like the b, the yeah, like, we still try and put that into her play a lot, and really face to face. We've got a little website that the from Australia, actually, and they have, like, these funny songs with those really hard pressure sounds.
Okay.
So I actually printed some off and laminated them.
Yeah.
We've kind of stopped using her Miko cards, which are really great as well, because everything's so accessible now. You can get it on the net. So, like, people don't have a speech and language therapist, like, they can still look up Miko cards and those really hard sounds that clefs have trouble with. They can still use them in their play. So, yeah, they're around, and we've given some to daycare as well, and they kind of have them out every now and then. So, yeah, to move forward with her speech, we still do a lot of sign with her, and I advocate for sign big time, actually. I'm glad we started it when we did. She understands, and they count that as words, you know, so she can understand a lot of words. Signing is still going, and we still have in the system, we still see a speech and language therapist every 3 months.
Right.
That's only till she's two. I guess it just depends on what's really encouraged and important at the time with the,
I had speech and language therapy, but not, you know, an awful lot. I realized with Will how proactive you have to be as a parent encourage that speech. Like, you know, I think if you don't have any speech and language issues at home, you don't realize, like, how much effort it takes on both sides. So obviously being proactive as the parent, especially if you don't have access to speech and language beyond a certain point, or you have to self-fund, there's so many things, and like you say, on the internet, and all these amazing songs and tracks and things that you can use. I think there's a big part of you as a parent that have to make so much effort to encourage speech, and especially if there's been hearing issues as well, like, you know, all interconnected. And that's the thing with cleft, is that you don't realize how much is affected.
Yeah,
from that diagnosis phase, like you don't know what might be affected and what not. So I think being proactive is key, definitely.
Yeah, so and it's like being within, even though it's great that it's funded with the SLTs here till they're two, it's only every 3 months. Yeah. And when once she's past two, especially when she hits three, that's not often enough. No. Even if she is in daycare and she's in with the ministry, she needs to be going weekly, like you say, that proactive. So
so in her in Keris's cleft journey, so obviously first two surgeries have done, she's had her grommets, speech and language were kind of on plan. Do you know what the next step is for her, either surgery wise or, you know, outside of speech and language?
She'll have her yearly checkup with the grommets and make sure that that's going all good. Yeah, we're kind of in the clear for a little bit until we have her checkup with like the cleft team and the surgeon after she's one.
Okay.
So that won't be until maybe like March, mm-hmm. April next year. Yeah. So they'll just make sure that her palate doesn't need lengthening and all those like little bits and pieces. It doesn't have a fistula, and you know, not often does she get fluid or anything coming out of her nose anymore. Like every now and then she did have yogurt or something like yesterday, but that was the first time I'd seen that in like a very long time. So it's not regular. But yeah, like if we have any of those concerns, then yeah, we're more than happy to get in touch with the cleft team to just, you know, follow that.
And as a quick side note, because I think this is important for other cleft affected families, you are currently pregnant with your second baby. Obviously, congratulations. I have already congratulated you privately, but of course, congratulations. But second baby isn't cleft affected, is it?
No, it's not. Another little girl. So yeah, I'm very thankful for our community and, you know, like you put out on your stories, your Instagram stories about like what can be done. And I had heard about the gene, mm-hmm. Em quote me on this, but there's a lot of other people that are very educated around it. I chose not to get that test, but I did choose to go down the natural form of folate, and I also upped that dose. So yeah, all good on the cleft side.
That's great news. I think, you know, because there's a lot of statistics thrown around that, you know, if you have one cleft affected child, your chances go up. And then, like you say, you know, people go down different routes of genetic testing or, you know, different types of folate and things like that. So obviously it's fabulous news that second baby isn't cleft affected. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Did Keris's cleft, either at diagnosis or, you know, ever since she's been here, has it changed your perspective on anything?
Just really how open-minded you are as a parent and what each individual parent might be going through. Because every child as a newborn or pregnancy, yeah, no one has an easy story. And I definitely found that out from my coffee group, you know, even just like a bunch of like 10 ladies, all of them had some kind of complication at some point. Yeah. And even like, you know, now, you know, everyone's got a different story as well. So yeah, just being open-minded and supported and having those, making sure you have those conversations. And
absolutely. So would that be your advice to other people, is to you know, for anybody that's just had the diagnosis, let's say, would that be your bit of advice, is to be open and, you know, and encourage conversation?
Yeah, and just that it doesn't seem like it's going to be all right at that time, but it will be. And there is so much support around, and so many lovely women and men that can help you through that journey. So yeah, definitely reach out, because I'm so grateful for our cleft community, and they're such lovely people that you can talk to about anything, you know. Like we've had lots of conversations, and you know, I'm so grateful about that. And even though I don't know Will and yourself like personally, like you do, it's a weird relationship.
So, you know, when my mum had me, firstly, they didn't know that I was going to be born with a cleft. And secondly, she was the only person with a cleft affected child that she knew of. Whereas you and I chat weekly, you know, every couple of weeks, whatever, and we are in parts of the world that we would never necessarily come across each other. So I think, you know, for all of its downfall, social media does have these positives and these little pockets of like are, you know, people just want to help, they want to see you thrive and, you know, support you and throw you information or throw you suggestions. So yeah, I do agree, you know, kind of reaching out to people, because if you feel like you can connect with somebody, that's like half battle of like approaching someone. Because certain people on Instagram that I really, really take to, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to message them because I just feel like I can. And so many people are responsive, aren't they? So I think that's a really, really good suggestion. So I want to finish on this note, and I think, you know, I'm not trying to make you cry, so bear that in mind. If Kerry had to listen to this episode in 10 years, let's say, what would you want her to know, or what would you say to her if she's a child or a teenager listening to this and hearing her mum on her speakers?
That is such a tearjerker.
I thought I'd better probably prompt you, because you are pregnant and I should probably just put it out there.
That she's a beautiful, strong, resilient girl that is going to go places with her positivity and confidence. And she is just an absolute delight that lights up the room. So, you know, I really hope that that personality really shines through, and you know, she keeps that confidence of who she is. And
will do, you know, with parents like you guys, and you know, always wanting to find the best for her, like, you know, even if she struggles going into teenagers or whatever, you guys will provide that foundation of support and comfort and love. So she will absolutely be like that when she's older. So yeah, I think that's a really lovely note to finish on before I cry. But Hayley, thank you so much for joining us, and yeah, thank you, my darling.
Yeah, thank you.